This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support is from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Robin Dow is producing, and in just a bit, we'll hear from J.R. Ball, the executive editor and associate publisher of the Baton Rouge Business Report, and that organization now headed by Julio Malera also does 225 and In Register, and they have taken the baton from one Rolf McAllister, who logged his last day on the job with us, but a guy who has many more days to go in his job is the head of the Family Forum, Gene Mills. He's been doing his thing now since the 1980s, and he has been taking a victory lap the last several months as the U.S. Supreme Court all but struck down Roe v. Wade. Abortion is still available in many states, but not in our state and not in many others, and it doesn't look like that's going to change anytime soon. But we have a new environment, and this is relevant today, among other reasons, in that this weekend marks the 50th anniversary of the January 22nd, 1973 decision by the Supreme Court, a 7-2 vote then. And by the way, seven of those justices were nominees of Republican presidents. But this time around, in 2022, the vote was 6-3, and it was Republican majority and on the high court, Republican-appointed justices, that made it possible. And Gene Mills, you've been fighting the battle, and I know you have to be pleased, but obviously this is an issue that does not go away.
No doubt, Jim. Good morning, and good morning to your listening audience. There are a great deal of efforts that need to be undertaken on behalf of those impacted by both abortion as well as the difficult cases that lead women to make decisions of that nature. And you're correct. Over two-thirds of the continental United States still remains an abortion available zone. So there's a great deal of work to be done to make the thought of abortion unthinkable.
Well, the thought is different than laws. And in this case, we now have a law in Louisiana that says you can't do it. You can not only not go to a clinic, but you can't get pills in the mail. Abortion is illegal, and if you do it, you could face the consequences, if you're a doctor in particular. And you wanted it that way, as did many others, and if it went to a vote of the people of Louisiana, what do you think would happen?
I think they would find the same thing that the court found. There never was a law that afforded the termination of an innocent life. I think the court in the Dobbs case said that law never existed. It was contrived by that court. And the court has corrected itself on many occasions. It did again in Dobbs. Mm-hmm. And polls today say upwards of 70% of America support limits, if not outright exclusions, that don't allow abortion to occur at all, and certainly not with taxpayer funding. So I think you would find that there's a great deal of support for a respect life ethic throughout Louisiana, and probably beyond throughout the United States.
Even in some conservative states, though, like Kansas, voters there went differently than the way you would have wanted them to. Did that surprise you?
Not really, because of the campaigns and the organization of both pro-abortion proponents and those who are willing to fund that have a tendency to be very mobile and very effective in out-of-state campaigns. And they were in a number of states.
877-217-5757 with Gene Mills, who will have an abbreviated visit today. And there are marches for life. That's the term used in parts of this country, one in Washington today. I'm sure there will be thousands of people marching in favor of laws that would prohibit abortion in this country. And now, in many states, including Louisiana, those who have fought this battle for many years have won the battle, but the war continues. And in Louisiana, we have a governor now who is a lame duck, but he wants the legislature this year to pass a bill that would include rape and incest exceptions. Would you accept that, Gene?
No, I hold the earnest position that every life deserves dignity and respect, immaterial or in without regard to how that life is conceived. The Guttmacher Institute, which is not a pro-life institution, found that only 1% of abortions are conceived by rape, and less than 0.5% by incest. And that statistic has remained pretty static. So we're not talking about the bulk of abortions in America, nor the 49-year period where, by virtue of the Doe v. Bolton case, a mother's psychological health could determine, and we know that's fluctuating throughout the course of both pregnancy and the lactation period that follows pregnancy. And there's a great deal of opportunity for exploitation, and we find that that often occurs. But on the hard cases, I unequivocally condemn the act of rape and incest, and I think the penalty needs to be aimed at the perpetrator, which is the rapist or the one who commits incest, not the innocent child in the womb.
That's easier for you and I to say. We'll never have to make that choice, but many women do. And what do you say to them? And they say, we don't have the standing to talk as they do about this issue.
I don't disagree. I'm not a woman, and I can't conceive, even though that's being debated in America today by some of your friends in both the media and here in Louisiana, who can't seem to come to the conclusion of what constitutes a woman or who can, in fact, conceive and or go through these difficulties.
I think that's another
topic.
But
I have been a crisis.
Well, go ahead.
It is, but it's closely related to the same general mindset and genre that populates newsrooms across America. But with regard to any ability to speak to it, I have been in this arena for 39 years. For over 15 of those, I directed a local crisis counseling center and saw in north of 10,000 clients, and since then work with as many more who often tell me abortion was not medicinal, nor was it healing. All it did was compound the difficulty of both the rape or the incest. It did not bring healing. It did not deliver what it was
promised.
Now,
in some cases, I'm sure there are psychological consequences to an abortion. I don't have any question that you're correct, but I don't know that that's the case most of the time. And it ultimately comes down to a personal decision. And you can change laws, but Gene Mills, can you really change people's hearts?
If the Constitution says it's not available, you can't change their behavior. But you certainly can make a policy position clear that says that's not allowed here, nor welcomed.
Well,
and I believe that will steer behavior.
Well, you ventured off into a bit of a different subject about transgender discussions. What about those who believe that if we had fewer guns, particularly assault weapons, we wouldn't have as many murders? Why don't we have laws on the books along those lines?
I think with regard to that same question, you could apply it to the rape and incest exception and say if we were properly trained people to protect themselves in those circumstances and avoid nefarious individuals by either virtue of mace or guns, we might have fewer rapes or incest.
All right, so but your you group, your group, though, it actually rates lawmakers based on Second Amendment issues. And my impression, tell me if I'm right or wrong, is that you are in favor of assault weapons being available to the general public.
I think a gun is not a weapon until it's used against somebody. And as by virtue of the fact that you call it an assault weapon, I have members of my family that have those, including one who's in special forces. But I will tell you this, it could prevent rapes from occurring if a person is able to arm themselves and defend themselves.
Do they need an assault weapon?
I don't think most of the crimes that are committed today are used or perpetrated by assault holders of assault weapons or what you would call a high-capacity magazine and an AR-15. It's usually a handgun. But that's a fact that seems to miss everybody's attention as well. But consider the fact that you could prevent a rape from occurring if a person could actually defend themselves.
Well, you can also
with the weapon of their
you
choice.
Can also cause a rape by putting a gun to somebody's head and raping them. You can do that too. But Gene Mills, we're venturing off onto it, and forgive me because I'm the one who brought it up. But we're talking primarily about abortion rights or lack thereof in our country today. And as you know, this issue will not go away. So what is your group doing and others in the, quote, pro-life camp? What are they doing now to either keep things the way they are to, or to expand the prohibition against abortion?
Well, obviously, I'm disappointed in Governor John Bel Edwards, our pro-life Democrat governor, for coming out and asserting that rape and incest exceptions need to be reintroduced. That is a battle that will take place in the Louisiana legislature when it starts later this spring. And I think it's going to be a vigorous debate. It's going to be difficult. I think some of the news reports kind of hyperbolize or heighten expectations that that is a winning position. I don't believe that the author of the bill, a Democrat from Monroe, Katrina Jackson, an African-American attorney, who's a very good friend, actually communicated that that was her position. I think in my speaking with her since that report that I think Hilburn put out, the title was very misleading. And her assertion was there needs to be some clarity for those who claim miscarriages are confusing.
All right, we do have to take a 90-second break. We'll be back to finish up with Gene Mills, and then it's J.R. Ball. This is Jim Inkster. Thanks for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Gene Mills with us, a man who's headed the Family Forum. As you heard him say, he's been doing his thing for 39 years, and his group is an advocate for family issues and takes positions on the searing issues of the day, which, of course, are often divisive. But Gene Mills, I'll say this, like him or not, he's a sincere man, and he's never wavered. He's not like some of these politicians who years ago were ardently pro-life or pro-choice and then swing all the way to the other side, just in one fell swoop, an overnight conversion like George Bush the first had when Ronald Reagan told him he had to be pro-life to be on his ticket. Well, in one night, George H.W. Bush became pro-life. Dan Downtown, you're on with Gene Mills. Dan, good morning.
Good morning, Reverend. Should a 10-year-old rape victim be forced to go through a 9-month pregnancy?
A 10-year-old?
Dan, I appreciate the conversation and the call. I think that's really going to be determined by whether it's available. I don't think most medical facilities in Louisiana would provide that service. And the question remains, who is the perpetrator? What are the circumstances? And what's in their best interest going forward, medically speaking? If it cost her life, I can't imagine anyone supporting that.
What about pharmaceutical abortions, which are now the most common way of ending a pregnancy, the morning after pill? Is there any wiggle room there for you, or are you against that too?
I personally made the decision that we would not do that at a conversation early in my marriage some 39 years ago with a good friend who was a Catholic who sat down and explained to me the implications of some of the pharmaceuticals and to my wife on a woman's body. And we made the decision for us personally that we would welcome children into our life, that they were a gift from God, and that we would celebrate that gift. With regard to their availability in Louisiana, you are certainly correct. Mail-order abortion pills are flourishing in the state of Louisiana, not legally and not with any regulation. They're coming from overseas often or out of state, and that is an illegal act prohibited by state law, as I understand it. And right now there's a debate federally with whether or not a Biden executive order or a federal measure can cover or prevail against Louisiana statute. But I do believe women are vulnerable by virtue of the fact that there's no quality control and there's no medical attention in the administration of those. In fact, I got a call earlier this week from a state rep whose sheriff had identified a young woman who had aborted a child at 5 months with a medication that came from India. She was having severe complications and struggling, medically struggling. It's a clear case of a violation of law, violation of conscience, and we should do everything we can to stop that.
Well, you are a man who works out, takes care of yourself. It sounds like you don't like medical procedures, and I don't think any of us do. Have you been vaccinated, Gene?
Have I been what?
Vaccinated for COVID.
No, sir. That's not something I feel like I needed. I've had COVID. I'm a very mild case, and I've been in time out because of my wife, who is a saint, and our 8 children who have bumped into it on a number of occasions. So we've developed, by virtue of my doctor's assertion, the best remedy you can, and that is natural immunity.
So no vaccinations for the Mills family?
Not so far, and not for the most part. I think I have one or two children that I may have chosen to do that.
Do you have any criticism for those who do get vaccinated or those who promote vaccinations?
I celebrate the right of conscience. What I fight against is big government telling you you must. In the military, in the university, at a local business, that is an overreach. When Uncle Sam steps in and says you can't go to church, you can't be with the elderly, and you can't hold the hand of a dying one, they've gone too far.
Gene Mills, thank you for your time today, and we hope
you'll
be with
you.
Take care.
Thank you.
And in studio is Walter J.R. Ball, a man who came this way by way of Baltimore, his hometown, in the 1980s as a student at Louisiana State University, and he has stayed. You took all those canvas trips with the chamber, and I remember once you went to Portland and you said, you know, I could live here, but you stayed in Baton Rouge.
Yeah, well, initially, that was hardly the goal to stay here. It was initially supposed to be a short-term stay here. However, you know, in the late 80s, early 90s, a series of events, I always tell people, conspired to keep me here. And then after that, you know, it just becomes your home, and, you know, you put down roots, you have children, what was supposed to be at most a 2-year adventure in South Louisiana has turned into basically more than half my life at this point.
JR worked at Tiger Rag Magazine for what, 11 years?
Yes, where you are star columnist, and with Steve Myers as the owner. Back in the interesting days of, Mike Archer, Mike Archer, Curly Holm, and Jerry DiNardo was sort of the bulk of my tenure there. So it wasn't the most sterling of football coverage, but there was always a lot of excitement mm-hmm. with basketball. And then certainly that was at the same time when LSU baseball under Skip Bertman was sort of making its rise on the national stage.
Well, LSU in those days, the athletic director for much of that time was Joe Dean, and he was a man who watched his pennies and nickels and dimes, and he balanced budgets, even though at one point they had 8 losing seasons in 11 years. And JR, I noted that LSU this year spent $51 million on football, $51 million. Tulane spent $5
million. Well,
what happened?
How much of that is that 51 all on current people, or does that include some of all the buyout money, or is that
I think the buyout money is TAF money.
Okay. So anyway, yes, in a 1 year sample, I think it looks outrageous when you look at 5 million compared to 51. I think the question will be to, over the next decade or whatever period of time you wish to use, who experiences more success. The other thing I would say is if you looked at the incoming revenue generated by LSU football and compared it to whatever revenue Tulane generated this past season. And look, I'm not knocking on Tulane. They were a tremendous football team this past year, and they've got a really fine coach. But for better or for worse, in the current climate of college athletics, I mean, it is big business.
It is big business.
Yeah, anyway.
Yeah, and football actually lost money at LSU on the books. But to give you an example, women's basketball, now number 3 in the country, last year generated $895,000 in revenue and spent $7.5 million. They lost $6.7 million, women's basketball.
Yeah.
So the coach, Kim Mulkey, I'm told her office, the renovation cost about $750,000. Every dollar spent on that sport is one not spent on football, which already spent 51. We're talking huge, huge, huge business here, J.R. Ball.
Well, it is. And again, there's all sorts of interesting calculations as to, you know, how do you determine what the value of something is. You know, LSU, for example, if Kim Mulkey were to take this women's basketball team to the Final Four, or a deep run into the tournament. You know, what type of value do you get by having LSU's name out there? I mean, that's always the case when you're talking about football and men's basketball. There was clear evidence out there when LSU football is successful, out-of-state applications for general student body enrollment go up. The two best players on my lacrosse team this year are at LSU strictly because they got all excited watching LSU win a national title. And they said, well, that looks like a place I'd like to go.
And we're going to segue after we take a break to Coach J.R. Ball, because he's not only executive editor and associate publisher of the Baton Rouge Business Report. And I guess you're involved with the other publications as well, correct?
Not so much anymore. My first go around there, I had a little bit more involvement, but I'm not as involved, although we all collaborate just because we're all in the same room together.
But he is Coach J.R. Ball of the LSU lacrosse team, opening its season soon and very soon. And we'll talk about it when we return. This is Jim Engster, and we are producing Talk Louisiana, and in studio is J.R. Ball, and ready to take your call is Robin Dow. 877-217-5757 is your number. And Walter J.R. Ball, who is a native of Baltimore, where lacrosse was a big sport in his youth, is now head coach of the LSU lacrosse team, in addition to his duties with the Baton Rouge Business Report. And he has 50 players. So how many staff members, or is it just you?
No, we have two assistant coaches, although I have an opening. One of my assistant coaches just got a job in Australia. So he decided down under was the way to go.
Well, you open your season.
We open up actually 1 week from now. We host Texas A&M.
27th.
Yeah, Friday night we play Texas A&M. And then on Sunday, we'll play Texas Tech in Baton Rouge.
In Baton Rouge. And, of course, fans or people who just were curious, want to know what the sport's about, like to see it.
Yeah, the good news is this is not like you don't need any priority points. You don't need any TAF points. You really don't even need a ticket. You can just walk in. And so, for those who say college athletics is getting, you can't afford it anymore, we're about as affordable as you can be. You can bring whatever you want to the game. You can bring your own drinks, your own food, and there's no charge. We play the vast majority of our home games at the UREC field right there on River Road. Most of y'all, when you're stuck in line on traffic trying to get into Tiger Stadium, you pass it all the time. But anyway, that's where we will be playing.
You don't answer to Scott Woodward, do you? You answer to other honchos out there, correct?
Correct. For some of the things that I deal with, I would prefer to answer to Scott Woodward, to be perfectly honest with you. But nonetheless, I do not. Yeah, we are not a part of the athletic program. We are in the MCLA, which is sort of viewed as a club, so it's more of a student-run club organization as opposed to a NC2A varsity sport.
So it's safe to say that lacrosse does not have a multi-million-dollar budget the way many sports at LSU do that are under the wing of the athletic department. And even determining a start time can be kind of tricky.
This is true because you're dealing with the whims of, in our case, a particular individual at LSU. So when you try to accommodate, plus we're also not traveling through charter planes. We are using charter buses when we travel. So, when you have a team like Texas A&M that wants to come in here and they say, hey, can we push the start time back an hour just so that, we don't have to leave at 6 o'clock in the morning. There's a lot of bureaucracy and hoops you got to try to jump through in order to move a 6 o'clock start to 7 p.m. And apparently there's more hurdles that we still need to leap through to pull that off. So
that's what you're trying to do right now.
Yes. But again, the bureaucracy of any government entity is rather remarkable when there is an individual who, just feels like, well, I have the power to say yes or no, and I'm going to show everybody that I have that power.
But right now, as we speak, the season opens a week from tonight at 6 p.m. right now.
At the moment, yeah. It's going to open up Friday night either way. I don't want to make it to do, you know, any bigger of a deal than what that is. And, you know, we'll be out on the field this evening, and we have an inner squad, and then, you know, off we'll go.
Well, lacrosse is a demanding sport, isn't it?
It blends, you know. I don't know, a lot of people down here really, they may have stumbled across it somewhere, but essentially, there's going to be 10 players out on the field at any one time. Offensively, a lot of the techniques or a lot of the theories of offensive lacrosse sort of borrow heavily from what you would see in basketball. There's a lot of two-man game. There's a lot of off-ball picks and things of that nature that would resemble basketball. You have the on-the-fly substitutions that you might see in hockey. And then I don't want to, because the rules are such that they're trying to remove some of the physicality, mm-hmm. but you do have some of the contact that you might see in football or in rugby. But again, I don't want people who have never seen the game to think there's guys lying up there just blowing people up with big hits. I mean, there's contact out there, and you can use your stick to check people and things of that nature. But so it really is sort of a hybrid. And truly, it was a game that was created by the Native Americans as a celebration to their creator. And despite what everyone thinks about hockey, it's actually the national sport of Canada.
Really? I remember the great Jim Brown, perhaps the greatest football player of them all, said lacrosse was his favorite sport.
Yeah, and, you know, for those who think he was just a great athlete, I mean, he could play the game. I mean, it's not like he was just some guy doing something to stay in shape for football. I mean, the guy was a force out there.
At Syracuse.
Yes.
And of course, as we know, he was the greatest running back, I think, of them all. And what he did in 9 years, and some of those were 12-game seasons, he never missed a game, never missed a play for that matter, and they beat the you-know-what out of him. Burt Reynolds told me that he met Jim Brown, and they were born the same week of the same year in 1936, February 11th, February 17th, that Jim Brown had all these scars on his hands, and he said, how'd that happen? He says, well, he goes, that's Butkus, that's Nitschke. They would step on his hands while he was down to try to send a message to him.
Yeah, I don't think those who decry, I'll just say football, when Jim Brown and there was, it was a much different and a far more violent game. And so those who think the game's out of hand now, I don't know. If they would, yep. I don't know what they would think if they saw what was played in the 50s, 60s, and early 70s.
And Y.E. Tittle, who sat in the same chair that you did, said that.
Well, I don't mean to insult this chair.
Yeah. He said he put thumbtacks between his fingers, and when he would get a hit that he didn't like, he would take his hand and he would graze it across the defender's face, and they would suddenly be bleeding profusely.
The glory days, Jim. The glory days.
The good old days. The good old days, right?
Before the softies started caring about living past the age of 50 with any kind of mental faculty.
And we think politics is a contact sport, but it is an election year. You've been through a few of those too, J.R. Ball.
Yeah, it will be interesting. You know, at the gubernatorial level. You know, it just seems like a familiar trend that seems to be developing in Louisiana, where, you're going to get a candidate who is generally seen as to the far right, in this case, Jeff Landry, who is sort of ordained as the favorite, just as David Vitter was almost 8 years ago. You know, then you have a bunch of folks in the middle who sort of beat each other up in terms of splitting the vote. And if you can get if you put a Democrat in the race, you know, that Democrat, just by the sheer number, assuming there's not too many Democrats in the race, makes the runoff. And then you've got basically a Democrat against a candidate who tends to be a little bit to the far right. Maybe various degrees of that, but just to the right. And then what you're left with is you have a lot of independents, moderate Republicans, and moderate Democrats who ultimately have to make a decision. The last two elections, you know, those moderates have decided that John Bel Edwards was a better selection than a David Vitter or
Eddie Rispone.
Eddie Rispone. So, you know, whether that dynamic plays out again, I think the big difference at the moment is to compare the names that are being floated as potential Democratic candidates, you know, that's not the same as when John Bel Edwards' name was out there. Just because he, if nothing else, he had the West Point connection, which was appealing to. And as you, we heard in the last interview, although I think Gene's probably disappointed in him, I mean, he's generally viewed as a pro-life guy. So he checks a lot of boxes that moderate Republicans tend to be concerned with.
Now, on the East Baton Rouge Parish side, we have a mayor's election next year. Sharon Weston Broom, a few days ago on this show, said she plans on running for re-election. You deal largely with the business community, and I bet if you polled most readers of the Business Report, probably most of them voted for Steve Carter, your good friend. And we'll talk a bit about Steve, who was an exceptional man, and he would have been, I think, a good mayor. But at this point, it's not an easy job. And who's going to run for mayor in 2024?
Well, there's a number of individuals who are being approached to run against the incumbent, Sharon Weston Broom. And again, I'll set aside my columnist views about this mayor, which I've been pretty vocal in expressing, and just deal with it from a straight news up thing. Look, the greatest thing the mayor has going for her right now is the power of incumbency. Then you're dealing with, there's a lot of individuals. I know there's a group out there that were at one point, they still may be, trying to see if there is somebody who is like a Tony Clayton type individual who might be willing to establish some residency here who could run. There's been talk that, and I don't know exactly how the political configuration would work, but that a Cleo Fields-Bodie White coalition would come together to run against this mayor. You'll hear all sorts of names floated out there. At the end of the day, you know, I'm almost to the point where I would encourage voters to think of it this way. Are you going to vote for somebody just because you think they can beat Broom? Or at some point, we're going to try to go out there and see if we can't recruit or attract somebody who is actually a bona fide leader, who can really help Baton Rouge unleash some of its tremendous untapped potential that we keep talking about this potential for decades upon decades, but for a lot of different reasons. And I don't want to put that all on Mayor Sharon Weston Broom, because it's one, it was going on long before her, and it's not her fault. I mean, there's a lot of things that keep us from doing that. But, you know, that's really, to me, the ultimate thing voters of this parish need to decide, you know. And it's tough, as fractured as we are.
877-217-5757 is your number. We'll spend a few more minutes with J.R. Ball, the associate publisher and executive editor of the Baton Rouge Business Report. He's been doing that now for, this is his 20th year. He worked for the Picayune for 4 years. He worked for Tiger Rag for 11. And now 20 years at the Business Report, which remains the Bible of business news in our community. Back after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thanks for being with us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757. J.R. Ball, executive editor, Baton Rouge Business Report, and coach of the LSU lacrosse team, is with us for a few more minutes. Doug on I-10. Doug, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana. Hi, Doug.
Thank you. Good morning, gentlemen. One of the big issues in that upcoming election is one that doesn't really fall neatly along party lines. It's also one that the Baton Rouge Business Report has done a good job of reporting on, which is the drainage, floodplain development crisis that we're in, and whether any candidate is going to be able to do anything in the face of the power of development and real estate interests in the Baton Rouge Growth Coalition, who basically have veto power over anything that the local government tries to do. And doesn't matter which party anyone's in Baton Rouge, that is the real linchpin of whether something's going to change there or whether we'll just continue down the same path at the taxpayers' expense.
Yeah, he raised a good point. Look, there are certain truths that you just can't avoid in no particular order. Look, we do have a stormwater management crisis in this parish. We could do a whole show just as to why that is. And to date, we have been reluctant to deal with that. Now, the federal government and the state is going to force our hand on that, and so we'll see what happens there. Two, there's no denying, again, this is not a political issue, but we are seeing more and more severe weather, which is leading to more and more flooding. Three, what is the highland or things that are out of the floodplain areas, you know, that's been developed, and we continue to want to go out. So when you want to continue to go out in your development, you're increasingly developing in areas where there is a higher likelihood of flooding. So, and there's all sorts of ramifications for that. And let's not kid ourselves, whether we're talking, look, politics is always about the influence of money. You see that in Washington, D.C. You see that at the state of Louisiana. I mean, look at trying to do anything on home health care when the nursing home alliance decides to take an opposite position. Certain groups tend to have an awful lot of power. And at the local level in this parish, you know, the development community does have a large voice, and they have business interests that they are hoping to protect. And sometimes those business interests don't necessarily align with what one might argue is the greater good of sound water and flood control. But we've been allowing people to develop in areas that there's no way we should have allowed to develop for decades. And government has been complicit in this, one, because they grant a lot of waivers, and two, they alter known flood maps to help encourage development because people actually want to live in these areas. So there's a whole lot of reasons for this. And to the point of how it relates to an election, this is why I always go back to the point of whether you're voting for Broome or whatever, do you just want to continue to do the same if you vote for Broome? If you're not voting for Broome, are you just looking for somebody who can beat her? And, you know, there may be some candidates out there that could. Or at some point, do you try to get somebody who has a broader vision beyond just let me get through the next election and get reelected? There's a lot of different ways you can approach that. And again, that's another two or three shows you could just do on that. But anyway.
One more call. Which one should we take? Mike in Waveland, Mississippi. Let's go to Mike. Mike, you're on with JR. Good morning.
Good morning, Jim, and good morning, JR. JR, I applaud you and anyone else who's willing to coach a club sport at LSU. That's doing it for the love of the game, that's for sure. Could you do this for me? Would you be willing to tell me the name or the position or both of the individual at LSU who's giving you problems with the lacrosse program?
Well, I don't know that I don't know that me airing dirty laundry, I probably said more than I should have in the get-go, is going to help me get what I need. I think if anyone did a Google search of the UREC program, you would stumble upon a name pretty quickly. But anyhow, look, I am. I wish I was getting what Brian Kelly makes probably in 5 minutes for salary, but I don't think I get that. I ran the numbers once, and I tried to remember. I forget what the number was. Is when you got to my annual salary, I think Brian Kelly makes that in under, I think, 15 minutes. So, you know, but yes, it is a love of the game. And frankly, and I will say, in a state like Louisiana, which does not have the same legacy, the reality is this. The best lacrosse being played in Louisiana is happening at LSU, even though there are some Division II programs in this state. But, you know, we've got kids from 16 different states playing at LSU on this year's roster.
Very good. And a listener notes that you were, I think it was GM, the spokesman. You were GM of the Baton Rouge Bombers for a brief shining moment, weren't you?
Yeah, 2 years. Yeah, that was a venture with Steve Carter, who mentioned earlier.
Well, and I wanted to mention Steve Carter. January 26th will mark his death date, unfortunately, 2 years ago. He died on the same day of the year as Bear Bryant and Kobe Bryant, January 26th. And Steve Carter was a coach, an athlete, and a gentleman. And those are few and far between. And even though he and I disagreed on a lot of political issues, we were good friends. And I miss him, and I know he was much closer to you than he was to me. He may have been your best friend.
Yeah, I loved Steve Carter. I still love Steve Carter, and he had a significant impact on my life once it was determined that I was going to sort of make Baton Rouge my home. So Again, we don't have enough time for me to extol the importance of Steve Carter in my life or the importance of Steve Carter on this community and the amount of lives he touched as a tennis coach, as a tennis instructor, as a public official, and really is one of the greatest human beings that has ever walked the face of this earth.
Well, J.R. Ball, you keep going, and glad you're in the game, and now in two games. Coach and publisher, so go for it, and we'll hopefully get an update from you. It's been too long since we visited with you.
Thank you, Jim.
Take care. And in our remaining moments, we're going to get an update on one of the real treasures in our community for those of us who live near City Park. The crown jewel is City Park Gallery, and the Baton Rouge Gallery is a place where you'll find all kinds of beauty inside, in addition to the elegance that graces our community from wherever vantage point you're viewing City Park. And Jason Andreessen has been with us many times. He's running the show there, and he's got an event or two or three coming up soon. And I know you brought a gentleman with us who's not from these parts, but tell us what's going to happen in the near term, my friend.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us on. We really appreciate it. We are in the throes of Surreal Salon 15. This is an annual show that we do every January that focuses in on pop surrealism and lowbrow art. It has grown exponentially since the first one, which was only open to Louisiana artists, was actually held off-site as a one-night-only event. And over the years, it has grown into what is now an international exhibition. We are absolutely thrilled to have Marco Mazzoni as our special guest juror this year. He is here with us in Baton Rouge, all the way from Milan, flown in just for the events around this weekend. In addition to the Surreal Salon Soiree that is happening tomorrow night, he'll also be giving a talk Monday at 5 o'clock at the LSU School of Art, one of our amazing partners on all things Surreal Salon. So this is a special mm-hmm. time at the gallery.
In this event, a listener says it hasn't been an annual event. It's kind of been here and there through the years, but goes back a long ways, doesn't it?
It goes back to 2008.
It is 15 in a row.
It is an annual event, except for the last two, where we were hindered by the pandemic. So we are very excited to have it back this weekend.
Well, it is an annual celebration mm-hmm. that celebrates pop, surrealist, lowbrow art.
Mm-hmm.
And it is now in January of 2023, which is where we are.
Yep.
And you've got a big event tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night, Costumes Encouraged.
Well, and for those who want to be there from 7 to 11 p.m., what do they need to do?
I'd say you're more than welcome to come without a costume, but costumes are certainly encouraged, and I think most people feel more comfortable when they are in costume. But we'll have drinks. We'll have an incredible band coming from Austin, Texas, called the Golden Dawn Orchestra. We've got a local DJ by the name of Jamie, who will be performing as well. And then, of course, the artwork that Marco selected for the show that includes over 60 artists from 21 states and 9 different nations.
Well, it's tomorrow night, and you can just show up, or do you need to make...
There are tickets. Tickets will be available at the door. Advanced tickets are available on our website, starting at $30.
Okay, and Marco from Milan is here. And as you can tell, he doesn't have the Baton Rougeoisie accent, but a beautiful one. Marco, you like Baton Rouge so far?
I really love it. I'm speechless. It is amazing the strong community you have. I'm amazed about mm-hmm. that. It's not normal in Italy to see these kind of things. I love it.
And easier in off season for football too.
That's true.
So, yeah, but what constitutes lowbrow art as opposed to highbrow art?
That's a good question. Well, the pop surrealism and lowbrow, you'll hear terms like that interchanged a lot. You'll hear new contemporary. You'll hear any number of terms get thrown around. It would typically be artwork that really values technical skill. It is a departure from the kind of abstract expressionist movement. And it is one that typically involves a good bit of humor from time to time. You'll have, you will see things like pop culture references, logos, any number of things kind of incorporated into artwork here and there.
Well, it's the Surreal Salon Soiree. Marco and Jason will be there tomorrow night, Baton Rouge Gallery, 1515 Dalrymple. Signature support from First Financial.